know that our God is very anxious about how we live together and how we help one another. In the beginning, God asked Cain a very important question. Where are you, and where is your brother Abel? That question had not only to do with the fact that he had killed Abel, but that was a question that had to do with caretaking. Are you taking care of yourself, Cain, and have you cared for your brother Abel? It was a question about caretaking. And there's a wonderful passage that I told about yesterday that has become very precious to me. It's a picture of humanity which is linked in the womb of God. It's a very beautiful feminist picture of God. We don't have a lot of those as we do the male images, but that we do have some. And this is one of the beautiful ones, I think. In the New Testament, in the book of Acts, chapter 17, God is not far from any one of us, since it is in God that we live and we move and we have our being. That talks about having your life within the womb of God. We are, when we look at that imagery, in a God-created sisterhood and brotherhood. And it calls us to care for one another, and there are no exemptions to those who are to be served. It's a powerful statement for me. It was a real revelation, you know, that we are created all in God's image, the entire humanity. And I think we need to keep that in mind when we do service and when we think about grace. We talked about a few passages yesterday too, just to raise up the issue. Treat everybody with equal kindness, it says in Romans. Never be condescending, but make real friends with the poor. If your enemy is hungry, give her food, and if thirsty, let him drink. And in 1 John, if anyone who is rich enough in this world's goods and sees that one of his or her brothers or sisters was in need, but closed her heart to him or her, how could the love of God be living in her? We know and believe that God is calling us to serve one another in love and grace and for justice and to give hope and life to those whom we are so privileged to touch. I wanted to repeat that because that is really the groundwork for my talk about grace, that you also understand what service is, what we think about when we think about service. And I think that in this context, we are talking about Christian service that we do in the name of God, in the name of Jesus Christ. There's something else then that we affirm when we say yes to service, and that is that we say yes to grace. I almost wanted to forget about that one. That's a really hard one. It's kind of a hard one to deal with and a difficult one to kind of relate to acts of service, but I didn't want to let it go because our acts of service are indeed acts of grace that require no payment, that engender no guilt, or those who receive need to give us nothing in return except to share with us the insight and, if you will, their gift of suffering, their poverty, their oppression, their need, so that we all become whole. That's what grace is about. That when we do service, we do that free of charge. We do not expect them to feel guilty because of who they are or to give us a payment, even a thank you. We do that free of charge. That is what grace is about. I was at a women's convention where Walt Wangerin had one of the keynote addresses, and he talked about prejudice. He worked in a inner city parish in Evansville, Indiana for many years. And I think that prejudice is connected with what we're talking about this evening. He said that in serving, one must look into the eyes touch the flesh and let the person be who he or she is. Not just a personification of a whole people. You know, we do that, don't we? We say, oh, that person's black and they're all lazy. You know, we tend to make exaggerations and make a person a personification of a whole people. We said it about the hippies. They're all useless. They don't know where they're going. They don't have any focus. And we do tend to lump people in a category, and usually a judgmental one, you know? And he said, we need to look in the eyes and touch the flesh and let the person be. Not a personification, but truly himself or herself. It is in this sacrificial service, a service of grace, that these prejudices go down and that the barriers are broken. And I think that all of us can identify some people, you know, that we say, well, he just doesn't seem like a black, you know, because he's different. Or that person, my, speaks a good English, must not really be like the people of his race. I have also chosen a few passages, like I did for love. And I think it's good for us to look at some of those. You know, I sat with a commentary this morning, rather with a concordance, and it was hard to find any that were directly linked with that word of grace. There just must have been 250 passages connected with grace. And I found a couple, but they didn't quite apply. So I had to look at benevolence and things like that. And I found some wonderful ones in the Old Testament. In the book of Leviticus 19:34, and remember, these are all people who don't deserve, you know, that we don't expect any payment for. And God speaks a lot about the stranger. When a stranger sojourns with you in your land, you shall not do him or her wrong. The stranger who sojourns with you shall be to you as the native among you, and you shall love him or her as yourself, for you are strangers in the land of Egypt, and I am the Lord your God. What does that bring to mind in our country today? The refugees, all the hundreds of people coming in and hoping for love and hoping for some kind of refuge. In 2 Chronicles 9-11, this was a very interesting one. It had to do with King Ahaz, who was king of Judah. And it was a time when Ahaz was a very unbelieving king. He worshipped idols and did all kinds of things that were against the laws of God. And God caused the Syrians to conquer Judah. And not only Syria, but Israel conquered Judah. And it says, the men of Israel took captive 200,000 of their kinfolk, women, sons, and daughters. They also took much spoil from them and brought the spoil to Samaria. But a prophet of the Lord was there, whose name was Oded, and he went out to meet the army that came to Samaria and said to the army, behold, because the Lord, the God of your fathers, was angry with Judah, he gave them into your hand. But you have slain them in a rage, which has reached up to heaven. And now you intend to subjugate the people. You're going to take them captive and make slaves out of them. Subjugate the people of Judah and Jerusalem, male and female, as your slaves. Have you not sins of your own against the Lord your God? Now hear me, and send back the captives from your kinfolk whom you have taken, for the fierce wrath of the Lord is upon you. And then he goes on in verse 15. And the men who have been mentioned, they mention a bunch of names who are saying, you dare not bring these captives into this country, by name, rose and took the captives, and with the spoil they clothed all that were naked among them. They clothed them, gave them sandals, provided them with food and drink, and anointed them. And carrying all the feeble among them on asses, they brought them to their kinfolk at Jericho, the city of palm trees, and they returned to Samaria. It struck me. We don't usually find passages like that in the Old Testament. It's usually the slaughter we think about. But that these people, in service, in a kind of service to people who had been in war, the prophet said, we dare not do that kind of thing. Just a couple more. There's one here, Acts 20:35. In all things I have shown you that by so toiling one must help the weak, remembering the words of the Lord Jesus, how he said, it is more blessed to give than to receive. And I think that that has to do with service also. And Galatians 6:10, so then as we have opportunity, let us do good to all people, all people. It makes no conditions, especially to those who are of the household of faith. I thought that those would be, you know, really, really good ones to read to you. Now, in light of that, and the fact that we understand that, we're Christians and we come out of a very compassionate context. I think we are compassionate people. How do we deal with our government? How do we deal with the fact, I mean, we can talk about South Africa, but this concept of Christian service is diametrically opposed to the realities of our local, state, and federal governments and and how they deal with need. And if we think of the past years, and I don't think it's been only this president, and I think that the fact and the reality of that has been heightened because of the budget crisis, they blame it on to the deficit, but that exactly all of those programs that have to do with what I called the people agenda have been curtailed and funds have been pulled back from that. How do we deal with that? Are we silent about that? Or do we also, for all those little ones, and for the women, the children, and those who have no voice to speak, they are the powerless. Do we have a rage about that? Or do we feel somebody's going to take care of that someday? I wonder if we could talk about that just a little while, because I think it's a crucial issue. I think it's a crucial issue for fall. We need to listen to our candidates and what they are promising. We know the tape runs dry on the promises that we hear, and it's always the good life. It's always more and more to make us feel happy. And just watch it. Just watch what the promises are. And those very basic things that would give wholeness to the life of so many people who don't have that is decent health care. And a good education for all the children, equally. I wonder if we could talk about that just a little bit. How do you feel about that? Maybe you have a different view. You think our government's doing a pretty good job. Do you have any situations in your local areas where you can identify that kind of a situation where property over people?
It's difficult to get into hospitals and to be able to stay there any time at all.
You say it's difficult to get into hospitals, mm-hmm. If you're poor or AIDS. My hearing is not real good tonight.
Yeah, if you're poor and don't have insurance. Or
yes. Okay.
If you're on Medicare.
And is that a normal, is that kind of a normal thing, do you think? Is that not the right of all people to have the privilege of having good health care?
The book I was asked to read for another conference was called Women and Children Last, and the point of view of that author was that one of the bad things that's happened in the last 8 years, aside from the cutting of the funds and so forth, is that the idea has been put across so successfully that those who don't deserve it. In other words, they've done something to sort of cause what has happened to them. And that she went through a lot of work in terms of statistics to show that, that those people on welfare, that a very small percentage of them, other than those who have long-term handicaps or something like that, have not been there forever.
Right.
You know, that they haven't been there a long time, that it's been something that has come up in their family very suddenly, a divorce, a death, you know, something like that. So that was her point, aside from all the cutbacks, was that so many people now believe that those who are on welfare are there because of some fault of their own, or that they're cheating the system, and those
very
kinds
common
of ideas.
Very common and general belief, I think, among the people. Talked about that a lot last week during Rainbow Week. One of the women talked about the welfare and the near poor now, who had been making $30,000 the year before, literally, and with unemployment then. That's a good example. Thank you for that. Anybody else want to share something? Don't want to spend too much time on that, but I think it's good to raise this issue, because we are coming up to an election this year, and we need to be listening carefully to what our representatives are saying, our senators, and the people in our mayors, you know? Anybody else? Yes.
One thing that was just happening in Portland when just before we left is that they were in the process of budgeting, I don't remember the exact figure, something like $15 or $18 million to move the freeway off the water, off the Willamette River for parks. And not that we were against parks, but it was kind of a shock. It seemed like it snuck in or was railroaded through or something like this, and I'm sure that there is a vote coming up.
And did they have to demolish a lot of houses for this? Is that what you're saying?
Yes, some of it. And just, we're also having, it's a priority of use of funds was the problem in our neighborhood. We live in a neighborhood that's in the middle of changes with gang problems coming in. And they listed in the paper real recently the number of abandoned houses per neighborhood. And it was pretty phenomenal, a lot. Like 100 in our particular area of abandoned houses that owners cannot sell, for a lot of it because of drugs and gang problems. And there's too much red tape, and it costs too much money to take care of these houses for it, so homeless can purchase it. But we have the money to move that freeway.
Yes, yes. Good example. Yeah.
One of the interesting or frightening things about the elections coming up, and I haven't been able to follow all the conventions, but the casting of the problem in the term, or in terms of liberal conservatives,
yes.
That liberal thing that you're talking about, yeah. You know, caring for people, that's liberal,
right.
And will bankrupt us. And it's a simplistic way to frighten people or to deal with the issues instead of really talking about passion,
yes.
Service responsibility. And it'll be interesting to see how the election
yeah.
comes, because I think those issues are being, or those words are going to be used, especially liberal is
right.
going to mean everything bad.
Right.
And
I'm glad you raised that. That will be something to watch, because that, I think, that kind of a dichotomy, you know, they label one group and they label the other, and without that attention to what are they really saying, and are they for people or are they for the better life, and more and bigger, number one, more Star Wars, you know, and it's going to be very interesting to watch that. Yes.
I just wanted to say that I talked to a state representative. I'm from Minnesota, and he told me he's no longer in politics, and he said that when he was in, they actually forget about the people back home. They're so busy helping each other, and I'll do this and you do this, they don't even think about the consequences back home.
Yes.
So it's kind of a game.
It really is. I remember a woman coming over from Nicaragua, Margarita Navarro, who was working among the poor, and she was trying to get an audience with the representatives here. She said it was just astounding what they didn't know about what was going on in the world. She said they had a hearing. She said to think that some of the people, and I'm sure that they're not all like that, but I think a great many are so overwhelmed that they forget about the people agenda of government, that is our major role is people. I can think of some countries where they do have people agendas, who are not wealthy and who are not number one in the world, but with whom we're warring. It's Nicaragua, who have reduced illiteracy from 80% to 12%, who have clinics all over. I went into the villages where they had built little cement houses during the earthquake, that people were just living under bridges and by the thousands. And it was the first time that when that government came into power, they said, now the poor are going to get our attention. And they are poor still, but people are not without shelter, without food. They are employed. And, you know, we can take a lesson from that. So I wanted to raise that issue. I think it's something, especially during this year, that we're going to have to think about. I read a book when I was preparing this on service by Dr. Dorothea Söhle. It was called Not Just Yes and Amen. And she had a chapter on grace in there that I found extremely helpful. And it has to do with what we're talking about in our own government. It happens all over. She's a German, and she's talking about what the Germans have been doing in their government. She says, a short time ago, in the course of its program for economic belt tightening, the German government attempted to limit its subsidies for homes for the aged, subsidies which are already slim enough. The basic idea behind this is the same one that my old aunt had and somebody mentioned here. The one who achieves something gets something. The one who doesn't achieve anything or can't produce anything doesn't get anything. This is a merciless proposition. It leads to the conclusion that the worth of those human beings who accomplish the least or who no longer deliver, in quotes, is strongly diminished. They are worthless in the eyes of society. And examples of this can be found in prisons, in homes for the aged, and mental institutions. In all such places, human society offers their inhabitants not what they need, but what they deserve. And since they produce so little, they deserve little more than mere subsistence. And I was going to mention prisons when you were talking about that before. You know, we talk about that we need more and more and more prisons, you know, to keep the criminals away from us and away from society. But there are very, very few that have any kind of rehabilitative programs. You know, prisoners are involved in punching out license plates and of doing certain trades. But that caring and that love and that companionship that probably put them there in the first place, the abuse that they have suffered, I don't know what the percentage is, particularly of women prisoners. The percentage is high of abused women who are in prison. But, you know, where do we go with that thing? And the church has all the limited resources, you know. She says the word grace does not mean the exaltedness of the one over the other. Grace means that we cannot buy the things that give richness and value to our life. Neither can we earn them nor achieve them by our own efforts. Friendship, love, the affection of others, forgiveness, such things are not earned, nor do they have a price. We receive them without cost. They are given to us. We must wait for them and do not need to pay for them. And we are the privileged who have that. We have that from our families alone. Many folk in America have suffered of loneliness and abuse and being orphaned. we still are a privileged people, that we can depend on that. We can depend that mom and dad are going to be there, and we have brothers and sisters, and we have a church community that will care for us. And I think when I talk about that church in mission, I think that we need also to bend our efforts and break down the walls of our churches. I used this picture before, but I think that we as the church, we need that strengthening so much, and we need the support of our fellow members, that we find that we are always turned in on the church. We're in there, we get our support, we get our energy, but I see the church as people facing out. As people facing out and having their ears and all their senses sharp on all of these needs of service. And we need to be doing that. We need to become a global congregations. And I think that we're working at that. I think there are many parishes that have moved into those arenas of really caring not just for one another, but for the little ones, those people who do not have a voice out there. This last little story that Dorothea told, I thought it was kind of a precious little story. She said, I once asked an older man what he understood by the term grace, and he answered by telling a little story. I was in Russia, first as a soldier, and then afterward as a prisoner. I worked with a farmer whose two sons had been killed by the Germans. The farmer allowed me to sleep at night along with the family next to the warm Russian stove. They put up with the fact that every now and then during the night I touched them, and for me that was grace. Isn't that a nice little story? I think that, you know, we don't want to be touched by the untouchable or by the enemy. And God says, those are the ones you feed and that you give water to. I thought that was a nice story. So it is so in our society. Those who got gets, and it's usually those people who are the haves who get the excellence, whether that be the hospital or the health services that you talked about, the banking services, who can get a loan. After my husband died, my credit wasn't very good. You know, it's that way. You carry your credit card for years in the name of your husband. Finally had that changed, and once he died, I tried to get some credit for my kids, and I could not get it. And I said to the children, I said, how strange. When someone really needs a loan, I mean, after a while, you go to get a loan. You don't have any money. That's why you go to get a loan. But the banks are not tuned to that kind of thing, for people who need loans in Chicago. They do have banks where they open their loaning systems to the very poor, and they have some very easy repayment plans. It is possible to make our institutions inclusive of all people. So in banking, in education, who gets the excellent education? They've tried to do it now through busing, that black children are brought into our communities and ours go into theirs. I'm not sure how much that has helped, but it's we, and it's just like in South Africa. In that video today, they told of 2,754 rand. Were spent on one white child and 364 on a black child. You know, it makes a person think, you know, where it's not fair. It's not fair. And I think we need to come to that point in our society where we rekindle the rage about that. It is not fair. And we need to have our voices heard. Job training. Who gets the job training? Seed has been closed, you know, and all of those things that had some kind of a ferment for giving people a dignified life have been just totally cut off. Even food services. So we are all aware of the drastic cutbacks that I talked about in our government. at the expense of PIPA programs. That would automatically lead into my next topic. What is the next step then that we take besides filling our food barrels in our churches and clothes barrels to the brim? We have a wonderful giving program in our parish. The barrels are just brimming with food and with clothing. And I'm happy to say that we've taken some next steps into the justice issue. How do we now, you know, there's the love and there's the grace, but there's also the issue of justice to which we've been called to understand and to become informed about. That'll be my next topic for tomorrow. And I'd like to talk a little bit more about federal programs. Would you be able to share any stories where you yourself have been touched by someone who gave you grace? And I will just mention something that I took back with me from India. We lived on the edge of a leper village, a village that was just set aside. It was right in the middle of our town. And every Sunday when we walked to church, we would pass a leper, a man who had no fingers, but he always sat kind of cross-legged. And every time we would pass, my husband would grab his hands. And he would always say, "Good morning." And he would never, you know, everybody would walk around this leper because it's supposed to be the touch that you have that will give you the disease. And he deliberately would grab his hands and say, "Good morning." For me, that was grace. I expect nothing in return. There's no guilt, but I love you. And I want to touch you because you're God's child, too. One could tell hundreds of stories like that from India, where the hospitals there and people have spent nights caring for others who were really untouchables in the eyes of that society. But I'd like to hear some of your own stories. I think we've all been touched by someone who has played that role in our lives of not expecting anything from us. And I think the other piece of that grace is forgiveness. You know, when we do that for somebody, we forgive them, even though we don't even know what it is that we're forgiving. But I think one of the pieces of poverty and of being in welfare, for instance, or of being a teenage pregnant girl, is the guilt that goes with that. The incredible guilt. And I think often we think of them maybe as bad people that have gone astray, but we forget about the burden of that guilt. And that's what grace does. That when we do service to someone who has been abused, or service to someone who is an untouchable person, think of the whole AIDS community and how people are just terrified, and they have they have that right for being frightened because that disease is just so rampant. But I know that my daughter, I have a daughter and a daughter-in-law who teamed up with an AIDS patient who was on his deathbed, and it was hard for them, but it was also a grace to that person. She said this man was just so incredibly, so grateful and so kind. But those are the times of grace that we say, "I forgive you." I have a daughter who had two children out of wedlock, and both of them biracial children. And when she was pregnant with the second one, I can still see her sitting in the kitchen, and she said, "I wish I could die and be resurrected again." And I said, "But you are. But you are." That is this marvelous message of grace and of forgiveness and love that in which we do service to somebody like that. And I have to say, the kids are 14 and 8. They were here last week. And they have been a gift to me. God takes care of those times when we give so much of ourselves that we don't think we can give anymore. And God replants all of that energy and that courage that we need to carry on. And I think we could sit here all night and hear your stories. And I want to hear some of them. I'd like to have a share something about your experience of grace.
While everyone's thinking, my most recent one that popped into my
mind. Could you talk a little louder, please? I'll try to repeat it if you don't hear it.
At Christmas time, finally our community decided a year or so ago that the churches would take turns taking two-week-long turns to shelter and feed the homeless in town through the winter months. And so our turn was the 2 weeks before Christmas, and we had never done it before at our church. But anyway, we were charged with sheltering them and then feeding them each night. And of course, before Christmas is very busy, but the grace to me was that the nights I was there and feeding these people, it was extremely powerful that I felt like I was doing exactly what I ought to be doing instead of the rushing around. You know, you would normally be shopping, mailing cards, you know, wrapping packages, all the things that you do before Christmas. And I just had this tremendously powerful feeling that this was more Christmas than what I would normally be doing. And, you know, it's difficult to explain except to have been there and felt they had given to me really such a Christmas gift.
That's a wonderful story. So I think we all feel that, especially at Christmas time.
Yeah, it was.
You know, I don't know what it is. It's just like we're kind of driven. We just feel that. I mean, I bake like 20 batches of cookies all the time.
And I try to plan not to be rushed.
Yes,
I try to plan not to be like that.
Exactly. Never seems to work. And I think that's a wonderful example of just saying, this is enough now. We're going to quit it. We're going to do something for people. Anybody want to share something of theirs?
Well, I've received from other people when I've been ill and we've lost close ones to us, my family, my dad. But last I've been out in Arizona 3 different winters or more, and I've lived across the house, the road from this one gal whose husband is in the nursing home. And it takes such a little thing. I'd never talked to her ever, just said hi. One day last spring, I brought over 4 muffins. That afternoon, she came over to our side of the street and talked to me. I mean, it's just such a little thing, but it's all it took. And she,
absolutely.
It made me feel guilty that I hadn't reached out to her earlier. You know?
How nice of you to do that, though. You know, it always takes that special effort. Yes.
It didn't take much effort. That's it.
No. That's true. That's true. 4 muffins. It can make all the difference. That's nice. Yeah.
Talking about not even being aware, about 15 years ago, my wife and I were at a convention in San Antonio, Texas. We went to the Alamo, and we're walking around there, and there was a little black lady polishing the glass. And as I was looking at some of the artifacts, I just said to her, how are you? And she looked at me and said, fine. And I walked around doing some other things. And she came over to me and she said, thank you. And I didn't really hear what she said. I said, pardon me? And she said, thank you. And I said, what for? And she says, no one ever talks to me. No one ever smiles at me. And, you know, it brought tears to my eyes because, you know, just a common thing that, you know, I didn't even think about it. And, but for her, being black in that place, and that always, you know, made me think, you know, how many things do we do or not or fail to do that would have such deep meaning for people just because, you know, if we would do them.
Just to hear a human voice. I think the elderly feel like that too, you know, that are in nursing homes. They never have the touch of love of other people. I think that's what I fear most about getting old, of that lack of, well, that's what I feared the most about losing my husband too, you know, that you don't have that hug every day. And where does all that, where does the strength come from then? Because it's the hug that gives you the strength. You know, it's not, well, have a good day. You know, it's that warm and human touch. And we need that with one another, too, I think. I love the sharing of the peace now, you know, in our congregation. I don't know if you all have a brawl with that, but in our parish, people are just moving all over and hugging one another. And I guess it can be a little bit gamey once in a while, but not really, because I think people really are serious about saying, I really like you, and they'll give a hug. It's a wonderful custom. Anybody else have something you'd like to share? Yes.
A little incident, too.
Yeah.
There was a time when I must have been 8 months pregnant with a 15-month-old on my hip, and some kids were walking home from school. They would walk right by our house to kind of a low-income apartment. And some boys were being really mean to a young girl, telling her when they walked through the park they would rape her. And she was really scared, and I didn't know what I should do. And I asked her if she needed some help, and she told me what was going on. And I had her come sit up on my porch, and I told the boys I was going to call the police. You know, I didn't know what I should do. And it ended up that we just called her mother to come and get her and walk her home. And the people across the street who saw this going on sort of laughed at me, and I thought, crossed my mind I was being very foolish with just even inviting her into my home. What? I don't know, I had a lot of mixed emotions with it. But her mother came and got her, and we didn't even really talk. She just thanked me for taking her daughter in. But I saw her, maybe 20 times the rest of the year, and we always had a bond there. There was something special.
Absolutely. I think the fears that we live with, you know, they do inhibit us from reaching out to people. You know, my husband always said, you can't lift or touch when you're protecting yourself with your arms, because the arms are not out there, you know, if you're always fearful. And I think we need to have some good street sense. But I think we are very, very fearful. I know that in our case, and it's happened some years ago, but my two kids picked up a hitchhiker and brought him home. He was on his way to Milwaukee, and he looked so menacing. You know, he had no front teeth, and great big guy. Found out he was a Lutheran. He had been an adopted son, and his father was some sort of a maintenance person at the Milwaukee Concordia High School, of all things. And, you know, we gave him a bed, and he kept staying. He just kept staying, you know. And, of course, I couldn't tell him to go home. It was just an awful situation to be in. And he said, well, the story came out then that he had been very heavily on drugs, and evidently had stolen a motorcycle or something like that, and that his trial was going to be coming up. I learned this on his second visit, that he had stolen his motorcycle. Anyway, he stayed with us for 2 weeks. And we were going to leave for a camp. My husband was going to lecture up in New York, and the whole we were going to be leaving, and my daughters were going to be home. And that's when I said, well, this is where just plain common sense, you know. So we said, sorry, Tom, you know, it's time for you to move on. And he did. He left. And he said, well, he was going to see his folks up there again, but he'd probably get back down to Texas again. And he was on, he had been on heroin, on some really hard drugs. What's the drug they put them on once they try to ease them off? Methadone?
Methadone.
He was on methadone. So I knew that he was on some kind of drug. He was a very kind fellow. You know, nothing was happening. He came back again the next year. And he stayed for 3 or 4 days again. But I think that it sort of shocked him, even though he was sort of taking advantage, you know. It shocked him that we had given him space. And I don't know where Tom is today. I haven't heard from him. Maybe he's even in jail. I don't know. But I feel good about that. I feel that God says, be hospitable to strangers, you know, and I think we need to watch it too, but, you know, what is that tension that you go through at a time like that? Where do you open the door, and when do you close it? It's just it's a hard place to be. Anyone else want to share some stories? Yeah.
At one point, we were living in Fergus Falls, and my husband was down in, this is in Minnesota, my husband was in Minneapolis, and we were buying a house in Minneapolis, so I was going to have to go down and to be at the closing of the house. And so in order to do this, I didn't want to drive and then have to take another, you know, have two cars going back home. So I took the bus in the middle of the night. The only bus they had was about 2 in the morning to get down to Minneapolis. And when I got on the bus with my daughter, she was probably 6 at the time, there were no seats in the whole place, the whole bus. There was just, the only seat that was left was one that was by this really strange-looking man. And he said, of course, won't you sit down here? So I thought, oh, well, okay, I will. So I sat down by him, and through the course of the drive from Fergus Falls to Minneapolis, which is about 3 hours, we were talking, and it turned out that the bus driver got back on, and he said that because there were no seats for my daughter, she was on my lap, that I could have a refund on my ticket. So I got talking to this man, and it turned out that he had been, I think, somewhere on the West Coast and was going on the way home to his family, but that he was obviously mentally ill and had had some problems, and he had been rejected by his family, and he was, you know, strange looking. But when we got to talking, he said, I haven't eaten in 3 days. All I've had in 3 days is 27 French fries. And I thought, gee, anybody who knows how many French fries they've had in 3 days has not really eaten. And in the course of our conversation, then I just decided to give him the money that I had gotten as the refund for the ticket that we weren't using. And it was about, I don't even remember, maybe $7. So I handed it to him, and I told him, you know, he could have this and to go buy himself a hamburger when we got to Minneapolis. When we got off the bus, the only person who said anything to me was this man, and he said, God bless you. And that was really grace.
That set a world of feelings, yeah. Well, I know that we have, all of us have gone through those periods that we have appreciated the grace of other people. I know that I have, God bless you all this night. This concludes our session.
Yes.